case for argument this morning is Krolnick against Prudential Insurance Company. Mr. Rolston.
Good morning, Your Honors, opposing counsel. This is an ERISA case involving long-term disability benefits. The district court dismissed the case in summary judgment under the de novo standard. The issue is whether Mr. Krolnick is disabled from gainful work. The relevant time period in this case is the year 2005. For 3 years after Mr. Krolnick was in the car crash, he attempted to re-enter the workforce through a number of different measures: physical therapy, chiropractic care, surgical consultation, medications, and vocational rehabilitation through the state agency, the DVR. Dr. O'Meara is an orthopedic surgeon. He monitored Mr. Krolnick's reentry to the workforce through the DVR program. Dr. O'Meara documented Mr. Krolnick's inability to work because it exacerbated his pain. In fact, after a number of months, the Dr. O'Meara, through his consultations and evaluations of Mr. Krolnick, determined that he was unable to even perform a sit-down position. The 2005 medical records in the administrative record contain objective evidence of Mr. Krolnick's back condition. There's an MRI that confirms a herniated disc causing left nerve root compression, as well as annular tearing at the same level. There are also 17 positive clinical tests for pain and decreased range of motion. There's also evidence of developmental fusion in the vertebrae and a confirmation of malapathy, radiculitis, neuralgia, and denervation in his spine. In addition, there were clinical tests performed that specifically measured his impairment at 23% lumbar, 15% cervical, and 35% of the whole person.
And do those tests, such as an MRI, support your claim that Krolnick can't perform a sedentary job?
Yes, Your Honor.
And that's primarily what you're relying on. I mean, I understand you're relying on ILCA's report and Dr. O'Meara's conclusions as well.
Yes, Your Honor. There were the MRI as well as the July 8 report of Dr. O'Meara that said that Mr. Krolnick could not work at all, and his sitting was limited to only 30 minutes. And Dr. Bell's September 1, 2005 report, based on assessments, clinical testing, and treatments, that he was not a candidate for working. Prudential then hired Dr. Ilka to review the records. Dr. Ilka never talked to Mr. Krolnick's doctors, never talked to Mr. Krolnick, never examined Mr. Krolnick. Dr. Ilka issued a written report that said the MRI was the primary evidence for the back impairment. His report said there were degenerative changes occurring in Mr. Krolnick's spine. Ilka said that he had a poor prognosis in terms of symptoms and functional abilities. Dr. Ilka said that the condition would never be resolved, that he would return to work only with restrictions, that he could sit or walk no more than an hour, and in conclusion stated, quote, "I do not conclude that he is not functionally impaired," end quote. Same day, Dr. Ilka, or someone on his behalf, deleted all of those objective findings from the report, provided Prudential with a second report, which released Mr. Krolnick to perform work as a heavy-duty pressman that involved lifting 50 to 100 pounds, even though his report had said that he was limited to lifting only 20 pounds. Dr. Ilka did not provide any reasoning regarding the treating doctor opinions. In fact, he made no reference whatsoever to the medical records from 2005. He only looked at 2002, 2003, and one record from 2004.
Was there any evidence how that language was deleted, why it was deleted?
Only a phone call that, through the SOAP notes, came from the doctor's office to Prudential, and changes using the same file number on the document, same document number, and then the new version showed up. There's no record in the SOAP notes as to communications that occurred. For the sake of argument, it appears from the record that Prudential didn't like the first report and changes were made.
Is he regularly used by Prudential?
There was no discovery permitted under ERISA, Your Honor, and in this particular case, I don't know, I did not find anything in the case law to indicate as such. In the case of Ladd versus ITT Corp., this court said that the plan's reliance on a consulting physician's report was unreasonable where the consulting physician gave no reasons for disagreeing with the treating physician's opinions. Prudential's reliance on the report with no reference to the treating doctors undercuts what the Supreme Court said in MetLife versus Glenn is so important to have accurate claims processing, and that would apply whether we're under a de novo standard or under the arbitrary and capricious standard. In addition, the problem with Dr. Ilka's unsigned reports is that they are not medically probable. They're not medically probable because they have all of the substantive deletions of the objective information, but in addition to that, his terminology used is not medically probable. He uses verbiage in his reports such as might or could and does not state that his opinions are asserted to a reasonable degree of medical probability. His terminology is subjective and does not meet the standard. In addition, Prudential identified some gainful occupations that it claimed Mr. Kronick could perform, but those three jobs violated his sitting and walking restrictions. In this case, a full and fair review is required, and under that standard, Prudential had a duty to inform Mr. Kronick of the evidence that it relied on, afford him an opportunity to address it, and then consider Mr. Kronick's evidence. Prudential failed on all three counts in that respect. We also have, in this case, a Social Security Administration decision that declared him to be completely disabled. I sent that to Prudential about 3 years, I sent that to Prudential about 3 weeks after Prudential made its final decision. They placed it in the administrative record, but refused to take that into consideration. And I'm happy to entertain any questions from the court. If not, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Olson.
Thank you.
Mr. Kuzniak.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jason Kuzniar. I represent Prudential Insurance Company of America, the defendant in this matter. We believe that the district court appropriately granted summary judgment in defendant's favor and against plaintiff on his claim for recovery of long-term disability benefits under ERISA. We think that there are two primary issues, either one of which would give the court the ability to affirm the decision. The first is that under the de novo standard review, which is the standard review the parties agreed applied in this case, that the evidence showed that Mr. Kronick was not disabled from doing any gainful occupation after February 1, 2005. And separate and apart from that, and as the district court found, as we argued in the lower court, the plan documents do have a limited pay period for disabilities arising from mental disease or mental illness. In this instance, Mr. Kronick does suffer from major depression. We advance that argument as a reason for summary judgment, and district court granted that as additional basis.
Let's talk about Dr. Ilsa, because he's a critical, his conclusions in his report are critical to support your view of this case. And he doesn't comment on any records after June of 2003.
A couple of points on that, Judge. Number one, Prudential retained experts for medical reviews They may use a variety of different companies, but here they used a company, QME. As I stand here, I don't recall what the full name of it is, but it's in the record. And they asked for an expert to review the file and identify questions. And in that letter to QME, they did specifically say we were providing you with all of the claim file medical records. So I think there's record evidence that all the records were sent to the doctor for review. With respect to the two versions of the report,
including the records that that were generated after June of 03, but ILCA just chose not to comment on it.
Correct, Judge.
And I think that's a problem.
Okay. Well, the report as to the records reviewed, it does identify the doctors that for whom the records were reviewed. Then it was an including but not limited to type statement in Dr. Ilka's report. And then it also points out only the salient facts that Dr. Ilka found to be salient and lists those in his report.
Well, here's the reason I'm concerned about that, because the September 05 report of O'Mara concluded that Krolnick was unable to work. And so why should we give more weight to Ilka's opinion rather than O'Mara?
Your Honor, I believe that if you look at that...
Given the standard of review, which is de novo, not arbitrary and capricious.
Correct. I do not believe that the records cite for the proposition that Dr. O'Mara had found him to be disabled from any sedentary occupation. I don't believe that is accurate. There are treatment notes and progress notes from Dr. O'Mara in, I believe it's December of 04, that says he is able to do light work and we recommend that he continue to pursue light work. I can take a look, but I believe that the records, and we pointed this out in our brief, that plans statement that in July of 05, Dr. O'Mara had found him to be totally disabled from any work. I think the record site does not support that statement.
Then you have the deletion problem.
And, Your Honor, with respect to the reports, there's an element of there's an intermediary where there's a consultant that is used to, or consulting service that is used to find the doctor to provide the medical examination review or review of the records. The record shows that all the records that were received in Prudential's file were given to that doctor, or given to the office, rather. On December 26, 2005, which is about 5 days, I believe, after the date of the letter or the report from Dr. Ilka, Ilka's office calls and contacts Prudential and says that there would be a corrected report issued and gives an explanation.
Did anybody point out to the district judge that this entire procedure was irregular? There are two possible styles of review. One is independent, people tend to call it de novo. And in that case, the decision is made on a record compiled in court. The other style of review is deferential, and then the decision is made on the record compiled by the plan administrator. What seems to have happened here is that the district judge said that it was engaged in de novo review on the record compiled by the plan administrator and evaluating whether the plan administrator had made a sensible decision. Those two things are incompatible. If there's de novo review, which you concede is proper, then the district judge makes his own decision, right? Doesn't make any difference what evidence the plan administrator had or what the plan administrator's thinking was.
That's absolutely correct, Judge.
What are we supposed to do where the parties seem to say review is de novo, and then both sides are asking about the quality of evidence and the reasoning of the plan administrator?
Judge, I agree wholeheartedly with you on the de novo standard of review. The question is, disability, and the judge determines whether the claimant is disabled or not in the ERISA context. The activities of the insurance company and are entitled to no deference. Their decision letters are entitled to no deference. So we agree with you that, and part of the problem may be is that plaintiff, in his appellate brief and below, I think was arguing along the lines of an arbitrary and capricious line of cases where you would consider full and fair review. You would consider, whether there's an abuse of discretion, and it's complicated.
So is it your position that the plaintiff just defaulted by not introducing any evidence and proceeding himself on this mixed basis?
I would agree with that, Judge.
I'm not asking you to agree with anything. I'm asking, is it your position that the plaintiff defaulted by failing to offer any evidence.
It is our position that
plaintiff. What happened?
Yes, Your Honor. It is our position that the plaintiff, under binding authority, plaintiff has the burden of proof to show that he is disabled. And the plaintiff did, in this case, ask this, you know, sought leave to take discovery. We had filed a motion for a protective order, basically going through the patent factors on weighing the benefit of the discovery against the costs associated with it. Certain of this did involve Dr. Ilka and wanting to get an understanding of what the basis for his opinions were. I think also Dr. Gerson was involved or, as a subject of the discovery.
Look, on de novo review, you don't take discovery into why the plan did what it did, because why the administrator did what he did is irrelevant, right? You just have medical evidence, and the district judge makes his own decision, completely ignoring what the plan did.
I agree.
It sounds like discovery is proposed on an irrelevant subject and then resisted on an irrelevant ground.
I believe he was going to the substance of Dr. Ilka's opinions in the case, and so it was not what the plan did, but what one of the reviewing doctors, what his opinions were. And I'm not going to make plaintiff's argument for him that if he thought discovery was appropriate, we thought it wasn't, and we opposed it. So I think that the record, the evidence in the record is that the entire medical record was supplied to the reviewing physician who gave the opinions, and then also that there was a communication back from Dr. Ilka's office to the plan Prudential.
All of which is irrelevant on de novo review.
Okay.
Every bit of which is legally irrelevant. Now, it may be that that's all we have to go on, but maybe the right thing to do in this case is say that on de novo review, the plaintiff has to introduce evidence. The plaintiff didn't introduce evidence. The plaintiff has the burden and loses. But the idea that on de novo review you analyze in detail what the plan administrator considered and why is just completely wrong.
I agree. If my argument suggests otherwise, I apologize, Your Honor. I agree with your position on that.
I want to ask you about the it was Prudential that asked him to go seek Social Security benefits, right? And then he did. They determined he was disabled. Why should we ignore their finding that he can't perform gainful activity? And, you know, is there any meaningful difference between the Social Security Administration standard for gainful activity than what's in Prudential's plan?
Yes, Your Honor. And I know I'm running short on time, so if I'm cut off, I would like to continue my answer. You are correct that there was a program assistance provided to the plaintiff. That is by contract. If you look at the plan documents, there is a service that allows for assistance with a claimant pursuing Social Security disability benefits. So I don't think that there was no independent judgment that that this claim warranted someone to go do it. It was a service that's provided by contract.
Well, would you address what I deem to be the heart of Judge Williams' question, which is there a difference between the Social Security standards and the plan's standards substantively? The Supreme Court has said in Cleveland against Policy Management Systems that when there is a difference, what SSA does is irrelevant. Well, that leads to the question, is there a difference?
I believe there is a difference. The gainful occupation definition would call for, among other things, payment, sufficient payment for other jobs, as I recall, and this is on the Prudential policy, specifically whether if you match up the language between...
I thought you were, maybe I've misunderstood your brief, but I thought that what was underlying this was the fact that benefits for depression under the policy were limited to 2 years, and the Social Security may have no temporal limit on that question.
I believe that's correct, Judge. And we have advanced in our brief, and we do agree that this was a proper basis for summary judgment in the district court, was that there was ample evidence in the administrative record, in addition to the Social Security decision, that plaintiff's disability was at least in part due to a mental illness. And under the 24-month limited pay period, Prudential had paid all the benefits that would have been owed to the plaintiff.
So, but I want to know, was there a difference in the gainful activity, can't perform the gainful activity? Because that was the heart of the Social Security Administration's finding.
Right.
Just put aside the mental ability, put aside the time limits for a minute. I want to know about the definition of gainful activity. What was the difference?
I don't have a good answer for that, Judge. I see my time
okay,
is...
So if there was no real difference, if there is no real difference under de novo review, that's a factor that the court could take into account.
I don't know that I would... The court's precedent has always been that the Social Security is not binding.
I know it's not binding, but I said it could take it into account.
And I think that's consistent with prior case law already in this circuit, is that the district court can always take into account the Social Security disability finding.
District court can't. That's why I cited Cleveland against Policy Management. Now, the Supreme Court has a case square on this point. Neither side has paid any attention to it.
If there's nothing else, thank you.
Anything further, Mr. Olson?
Dr. Ilka's reports do not list Dr. Bell's documents as documents that he reviewed. He does list Dr. O'Meara, but not Dr. Bell.
Mr. Olson, why is any of this relevant? On de novo review, you have to compile a record in court. What the plan administrator did is completely beside the point.
I think
you introduced your own evidence in this case.
Yes, Your Honor. However, I think where the overlap occurs as to what the administrator did is that the district court, in its de novo review, is looking at the records that were before the administrator when they made the decision.
No, it isn't. That's the problem comes from referring to this as de novo review. It is not review. It is a de novo decision. It's just like a contract case. In fact, it is a contract case. Right? When parties to a contract have a dispute, the district judge doesn't review one side's decision about the application of the contract. The district judge takes evidence and makes a decision. Well, that's what this is. It's a contract dispute. The district judge takes evidence and makes a decision. But neither side seems to have offered the district judge any evidence.
Your Honor, my understanding of the way it operates is that under the de novo decision, there is no discovery, there is no evidence that's permitted outside of the administrative record.
You need to reread cases like Perlman against Swiss Bank.
Yes, Your Honor. I had attempted to submit a document, in fact, and the judge ruled that anything outside of the administrative record was not permitted.
No, that's completely backward. That's true on arbitrary and capricious review. I mean, this is all laid out in Perlman against Swiss Bank. And if what you wanted to do was review that, you could have appealed on the ground that the district judge was just backward in a de novo decision case.
Mm-hmm. Well, this appeal is based on the record that shows the disability, and not only was it ignored by Prudential, which you're saying is irrelevant, but it was ignored by the district court.
But the 2005 district court approached it from an abuse of discretion.
Right.
I mean, you know, arbitrary and capricious. It's the view, it's the way the district court looked at how this had to be resolved. And the problem is here there was a stipulation. It was de novo. I mean, that's what takes us out of the normal, because normally that's what it is. It's arbitrary and capricious.
Sure.
So and the district court just kind of got off on the, everybody just proceeded to me if they were under that standard. And that's the problem. So nobody looked at it through the lens of de novo being decided. So.
Well, our point is, under de novo review, looking at the evidence in the record, the district court ignored the 2005 medical evidence of Krolnick's disability that prevents him from performing sedentary work. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much, Mr. Olson. The case will be taken under advisement.